The title of this interview is called The Unconventional Methods That Work from One of the Highest Paid Copywriters of All Time, Eugene Schwartz. If you're like most writers, you want to produce copy that turns readers into customers so you can turn your writing into cash. That's exactly what Eugene Schwartz did, and in this speech he gave to a group of copywriters at Rodale shortly before his death, he revealed all the quirky methods he used to make his copy soar to unrivaled rates of conversion, while other copy got thrown in the trash. Eugene Schwartz called himself the hardest working copywriter in the business, even though he only worked 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Because he could separate the creative from the working parts of his brain, Eugene was able to maximize his time, avoid writer's fatigue, and deliver an outstanding product every time. To do this, he used a technique he adapted from Mozart, which you'll hear about in this audio recreation. You'll also hear the sneaky Zen method Eugene used to get rid of writer's block. You'll learn why it's important to redline the word creativity when it comes to your work, and how Eugene made it operational, tangible, and doable. You'll learn how to use a timer and 3 pencils to stay focused on your copy and keep yourself on task. You'll learn a pure magic formula that uses claims, mechanisms, and proof in just the right way to turn prospects into customers. You'll learn the most powerful word in the English language that you need to make sure you include in your copy, and the word is not free. You'll learn the simplest way to always have a headline that sells. So in this audio recreation, you'll hear what good copy consists of, how to assemble it, how to avoid most of the stumbling blocks that keep even the best writers staring at a blank page. And this speech has something for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned pro, you'll come away with a fresh new look on marketing and on your copy and the potential it can have on your wallet. This is not the kind of speech you can listen to one time. Every time you listen to it, you can learn something. I hope you enjoy. Now let's get going.
This is Eugene Schwartz. Today, I'm going to teach you something about copywriting. I want to tell you what I'm going to do today. If you work with computers, and I love computers, can you say, be transparent? Be completely open and show me every single step that you took. Now, the computer has no non-transparency circuits. Human beings have enormous amount of non-transparency circuits. So the computer will then show you every step it took. I'm going to be completely transparent with you today. I like writing. I like copywriting. I like merchandising. And I think I discovered a few very simple, obvious ways of doing this. So, I'm going to tell you the complete truth. I'm going to tell you anything you want to know. I'm going to be completely redundant and completely infantile because I'm going to start at the very, very, very simple things that you already know. And then I'm going to work to some things that perhaps you do not know. Let me start with the most important principle of success in publishing my or any task that you want to achieve goals. And of course, it is very simply hard work. Let's say, if I've got 27 out of 30 hits, then I have a 90% ratio, which is pretty good. Okay, I got that not because I'm extremely talented or extremely creative or anything like that. I like to think of myself as working harder than anybody untested against me. There are much better copywriters working for your firm than I am. There is nobody writing for your firm that I know that works harder than I do. And you have what I call the Super Bowl of mail order publishing here. What happens is you will get a book, and you hire 2 copywriters. You don't tell them who is the other person, and you say, write copy here, write copy there, and we'll test it. It is the Super Bowl. It is the best in the world. When you write for Rodale, you know you're coming up against the best, most talented, brightest, oldest, youngest people in the world, and you're going to have to beat them. And how do you beat them? The only way that I know to beat people as inventive and creative as these people is to outwork them. And so, I long ago invented a system of working hard that is extremely powerful. Let's say that I'm called and someone says, I'm going to send you a manuscript. You're going to send me back copy in 5 weeks. Okay, the manuscript arrives. The manuscript here now is about 1,100 pages. 1,100 pages is a lot. Okay, what I do is I take the 1,100 pages and I go through it in about 2 weeks. How do I go through it? I take the manuscript and I underline or grab it, the claims, as I go through every page. Now, I take a red pencil and I put it at the front and back of each claim. And perhaps I'll have 3 pages about claims. I am building, at that time, out of the manuscript, a summary, vocabulary. They're all equivalent terms. I am getting the guts and the heart and the meat and the gist out of that manuscript. Now, I go through every single page. It's 1,103 pages. I go through every single page. When I am done, as I am doing, I send it over to my secretary or to a freelance typist, and that person types up my vocabulary. It will come back to me between 50 and 60 pages. They will be essentially what I see as the strongest points in the book. Now, I think it's very important to know that I don't really have any ideas when I open the book. I take the table of contents and I put it to the side. I won't even look at it. I start at the first page of the book itself, and I work my way through to the last page of the book. I'm not interested, really, in what other people think is in the book. I am interested only in the book itself. I want to come across the claims as surprises. I want them to astound me. I want them to move me. I don't want to come to them with a vision of my own. As I'm going through that, I will get ideas, of course, and respond to the ideas in the book. I carefully take them, and I write them on a little piece of paper. I don't do much with them. I just scratch them out in my own little shorthand and put them aside. When I get back the vocabulary is in print, and it's on a disc. I put the disc in my machine, and I'm ready to go. I start with the top again, and I start now organizing, selecting, inspiring, associating everything else again. Finally, I have a rough ad. Now, if you put 50 pages into a computer, use a single file, the computer will not like you. It will be very unhappy with this. It will have indigestion, and it will take a long time to go from back to front. So, the computer requires categorization from you. It will force you to break it up into blocks, and you will find yourself pulling things out and placing them in separate, manageable files. So, your first organization is dictated by the computer's necessity. Then, I write my beginning ad. No headline now, no subheadline, no flyer headlines, nothing like that, just sure claims. And when I'm through with that, 3 weeks have passed, and the pressure is building up. I can feel the people down here getting very nervous, and the phone calls sometimes sneak through. How you doing? Wonderful. Oh, it's great. Sensational. I can feel the strength. How about sending us an envelope? Oh, I can't do that right now. Well, I haven't even written the envelope. I haven't a word of the envelope. I'm still building. Okay. Then I begin selecting those claims, which are the most unusual, the most powerful, and I'll explain how I arrive at those decisions. And I begin writing my envelope, or I begin writing my heads, or I begin getting the big type stuff. By the time I've done that, the fourth week has passed, and now I take everything I've done. It's not finished yet, but it's certainly taking shape. And it's beginning to look like what you're going to see when this stuff comes up. I go back over it with the manuscript. I check it again. I made little notes. I put little checks. Something to offer. Something is missing here. Something hasn't quite built it. So I go back over it again. When I am through on the fifth week and I send down the copy, I want to know the book as well or even better than the editor. I'm going to spend a lot of time on this because this is what makes success. There's nothing else in the world that makes success such as this. Okay. I will take the best copywriter in the world who is sloppy and careless and match him against a good copy cub. And 2 out of 3 times, the sloppiness of the great person will be beaten by the carefulness of the other person, because the power of the ad for a book or a product, any publication or any instrument, is always in the product itself. It's not in the copywriter. The copywriter simply finds it and expresses it.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
I wrote an ad recently for a book for a doctor who I never worked with before, who was not a Rodale author at all. And I sent him the copy, and he sent the copy back. The copy said you can eat fats, meat, and eggs. And he crossed out the word eggs. And I called him. I had never spoken to him. And I said, "Doctor, I don't understand why you crossed out the word eggs." He said, "Well, because I never used anything about eggs. Eggs can't be controlled." And I said, "Doctor, on page 164, this sentence about eggs, which I quoted." And he laughed. Now, why did he laugh? He laughed because I am an amateur who was criticizing an expert about his own text, and I knew more about his text at that moment than he did. When I heard that laugh, I was very hopeful that the ad would succeed because I knew that much. I spent half my time working on mail order copy, I spent half my time collecting art, and I spent half my time writing my own book. It comes to 150%, yes, and I'm very busy. But I had recently written a series of books on religion, and I was helping and working with the leading Christian theologian in America, a young lady who is absolutely brilliant and beautiful, and she was asking me for some editorial comment on her book. And she sent me 26 pages. I read them and called her up and said, "This passage from Mark is wrong." And she said, "But Mark says these three words about Pilate." And I said, "No." And she laughed. Now, why did she laugh? Because she's the best authority in America on that, but she hadn't checked Mark versus Matthew. And they blend in people's minds. I had checked exactly the words, and that check made the difference between her being attacked in the press for being irresponsible and her being right at no cost. I want to be more accurate and more knowledgeable than anyone I come up against. You want to be more accurate and more knowledgeable than anyone that you come up against. The person who is best prepared and the most knowledgeable makes the most money. I mean, it's so simple. The football coach at West Point during World War II, his name is Greg Blake Smith, and he said, "The will to win means nothing without the will to prepare." So, the first thing is very simple but very important. Everything else I'm going to tell you, it means nothing without. If you'd like to make money, if you'd like to live on Park Avenue, if you'd like to have a world-famous art collection, work. Just work. Anyone can do it. You're all brilliant. You wouldn't be here unless you're brilliant. You work for a great firm. Work hard, you get there. Okay. I don't say you have to work impossible hours now. Remember that. I worked 3 hours a day, every single day, for 5 days a week. That's all I worked. I worked 3 hours a day. 3 hours a day, I get very tired, and I go work someplace else. But it's enough that I can do this because I'm better prepared than anyone else. Now, how do I work? What is the secret? I've never had a writer's block. I've done 30 ads for Path. I've done dozens of ads for Boardroom, dozens of ads for myself, and many ads for Phillips. Dick Benson is the editor. I've written 9 books. I've written many articles. I turn out a ton of material continuously. I never have a block. I always love to write. I never stare at the page for more than a few minutes. What do I do? It is tough, enormously difficult for you to sit down in front of a blank page with a blank screen and say, "Okay, I'm going to create." Especially when you are working against the world's best, which is where you want to be. Against the world's best. Therefore, you can't think about beating them. You can't think about how much pressure they have. You can't think about how much money is involved. You can't think about anything except what you're going to write on the page. Now, how can you free yourself of all this anxiety, all this blockage, all this self-doubt? Well, it's very simple, of course. What you do is you use an old Zen trick. Zen masters are enormously proficient and have been for 2,000 years. And they have a very simple system, which I use continually. I use every day. You walk in to the same place that you always write at. Now, when I say write at, you work at. If you do editorials, if you're an account exec, etc., you're always at the same place. At home or at the office. I happen to work at home. I don't write at the office. I don't write any place else in the world except one desk where I have written for the past 28 years. That desk is a nice, big, comfortable desk with an incredibly sloppy amount of paper all over it. I create chaos. I like it because it gives these wonderful little accents. You come in, you've got a set time that you may or may not keep. I never keep it. It's somewhere around 9:30. It's usually around 10 o'clock. But I know I'm going to be there every morning. You come in, and you do the same thing all the time. Many people sharpen pencils. I don't have pencils, so I don't sharpen them. But I certainly have my little pens. So I take three of them out. One, two, three. I have one cup of coffee in the morning and my coffee intake for the day. I take the coffee and I place it down. I have a pitcher of cream. Very important that I have the pitcher of cream by the coffee. I take it and pour it in the coffee. I take the spoon. I take the coffee. I take my computer and I ask it to bring up the new Rodale ad I'm working on. It's wonderful that it does that. There's 50 pages staring at me and page one. This is the liberating. This is the thing that frees you from all the anxiety and all the lack of self-confidence in the world. It is a timer. It is a punch-in timer. And what I do with it is this. I take boom, 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 and boom. And I've got 33.33 minutes. Then I punch on and it starts ticking down. Now, I put it down and then sit. I have no goals for the next 33.33 minutes except to work on the copy. Now, I don't have to work on the copy. There's absolutely no necessity for me to work on the copy. I can sit there. I can stare at. I can drink the coffee. I can stare some more, drink some more coffee. I can do anything in the world except not get up from the desk, not even write my own name. I just sit there. Sooner or later, I'll get bored. My boredom comes in 1 or 2 minutes. Then I begin looking at the copy. As I look at the copy, I begin paging up and down. And as I do that, something reaches out from that computer and grabs me and says, "Hey, aren't I beautiful? Hey, aren't I powerful? Hey, start with me." I say, "Okay, this is good, but it's not quite great. Wouldn't it be better if we just took these two words out and condensed it a little?" So I do that. And then I go a little bit more, and I see another one. And I do that. I had no goal that has anything to do except for the copy and the thing that's staring me in the face. So I'm not worried about the test or the money or the overhead or the rent or the new car or the new painting. That's all gone. I'm just working on that. Now, what I do is I work for 33.33 minutes. At the end of 33.33 minutes, this little thing rings. It's very important that it'll ring. You've got to get a timer that rings because you should be so absorbed that you shouldn't notice the time passing. Now, we've got a timer in this room right here, besides this one, which is that television camera which is staring at me. That television camera has a 30-minute cycle, I believe. And what's going to happen at the end of 30 minutes is he's going to wave. Now, how many minutes have gone? There are 4 minutes left. Okay. 4 minutes from now, this man is going to wave at me. And we will have spent 30 minutes together. When he waves at me, I'm going to stop. I'm finished. I am going to interrupt myself and you, and we are all going to sit around and do anything we want. I'm going to go to the bathroom, talk, scratch our heads, do anything we want for 5 minutes. But we're not going to do any more talking. We are not going to do any more listening. Why? Because when you're working, you're not creating. The whole secret is to know when you're working and leave work and go on to creation. And what do I mean by that? Number one, copy is not written. If anyone tells you you write copy, sneer at them. Copy is not written. Copy is assembled. You do not write copy. You assemble it. You are working with a series of building blocks, and you are putting the building blocks together, and then you are putting them in certain structures. You are building a little city of desire for your person to come and live in. You are not writing. You are assembling. You are assembling claims. You are assembling images. And you are assembling desires that people will pay $33 to share with you on a 21-day guarantee. So, forget about that. Anybody in this room who writes copy, anyone in this room who works with copy must realize that the person they are working with or the thing that they have to do is not right. The one thing I hate most in the world and shows me absolute disaster is when someone comes up to me and says, "Wow, the headline is so beautiful. Where did you get those words? They're gorgeous." I say, "Oh, God, you're seeing the words, not seeing through the words. You're seeing the words themselves. No good. If you want to write poetry, if you want to write prose, if you want to write novels, and if you want to write literature, go outside of advertising. Words in advertising are like the windows in a store. You must be able to look right through them and see the product. If you see the window, it's dirty. And you're going to see yourself, or you're going to see the smear. You're not going to see the product, and you're going to lose. Copy should never call attention to itself. You should never know that you are reading sentences, and the words should never pronounce themselves. What you want people to see is the visual, visceral image of what the words are conveying. That is how it works. You've got to break that fascination, of course. You have to have the right words. Of course you have to have the punch headline, but when the right words come, the people don't see them. They feel them. Here, sneaky little arthritis tricks. Four words. None of them is an exceptional word. They're all pretty standard, mundane words. It is their combination that makes their power. One of the words is a word that should not be used in advertising, sneaky. Because we don't like to sneak around. People sneak around. It's not very appealing. You don't want to be identified with those. But when a person who has arthritis and has the pain of arthritis and the humiliation and dependency of arthritis sees sneaky little arthritis tricks, and if they have gone to doctors and spent hundreds of hours trying to follow doctors and not been able to be helped by doctors, they know exactly what you're talking about. It isn't at all like what it is when you're alone. I assume that you're alone when you're writing or working. I'm alone, and I have been working for 33 minutes, and I'm going to work for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 33-minute periods today. And I'm going to assemble and judge and read carefully for those 33-minute periods. Now, what am I doing when I do that? I'm following what somebody else has done. Somebody else has organized some material and presented it in their way. They may not know the market as well as I know the market. They may not have as much training in copywriting as I do, but they are setting up a sequence, and they are setting up a vocabulary, and they are setting up a tone. It's all beautiful, but they're not going to sell the book. So, for the 33.33 minutes, I have to be extremely logical, learning, malleable, dependent, etc. After that time, when this rings, I'm going into creativity. Now, I hate words like creativity. I despise them. If you say the word creativity, what does it mean? It has no image inside of it. God created the heaven and the earth. What God did is he took nothing and made heaven and earth. You can't take nothing and make anything. You're not God. So What we have to do is, because I like operational words, and operational words are words that you use to work from, they give you a method to work from. So, creativity to me is what I call connectivity. Of course, it is the ability to take two ideas that already exist that are in two different sentences or even in two different fields and put them together, connect them. What you are doing when you are creating is you are trying to connect two separate ideas that logically would not go together up until that moment. So, you're looking for a connection. You're looking for a brand new connection. When you have a brand new verbal word connection, you have something that can startle your reader. Something that can stop your reader. Something that can inspire, move, or sell your reader. Okay, we go back to sneaky little arthritis tricks again. Think about this for a minute. Let's talk about Rodale's position when they published this book. Rodale has been selling books by doctors or books by people who follow doctors for many years now at this time. They've had much success and grown very beautifully. Suddenly, for some reason I don't know, they come across the book about 700 people who did not follow doctors, who went away from doctors. The doctors couldn't help them. They had received medicine, these people, saying, hey, you couldn't help us, but we did this on our own. And they published this absolutely marvelous book. People go away from doctors when the doctors can't help them. When the doctors can help them, of course they stay with them. It's very simple. But when patients are given very strong drugs by doctors and go into copper bracelets, let's say, they feel very bad about that. They don't want to do it because they really rely on doctors. They feel guilty. And that was the thing that came through. These people were saying, I had marvelous results, fabulous results, but I'm uneasy about it. What's happening? What will the doctor say? Will he catch me? Will he take away my strong drugs, etc.? So I'm doing this, putting all this together, these wonderful quotes, these various stories, and all of a sudden, I'm off in left field someplace. And the four words that come in by themselves, I don't write them. I don't assemble them. I don't do anything. Sneaky little arthritis tricks. They come. Bam! They're there. I have created this four-word combination. Once that comes to me, people talk about the muse. The muse means your unconscious mind is delivering something to you. What you do with it, if you've got to make money on it, if you want to set new records in sales with it, first you put it up, and then you see what I can say after that. Then we have sneaky little arthritis tricks, redlined with natural foods, and do-it-yourself secrets. The pain improved in over 100 men and women like you. Now, the first is a catch, a hook. The second is a sort of proof. We're talking about natural foods. We're talking about do-it-yourself secrets. We're talking about being pain-free, and we're talking about men and women having proved this for you, so you don't have to prove it yourself. That's the second line. The first line gives this wild claim. The second makes it doable. Then there are these immensely beautiful pictures, wonderful pictures from the art department. And what do they say? All symptoms disappeared and have not returned. I mean, this beautiful woman walking, the man being kissed by the child. After another 10 days, I felt cured. And even the rheumatoid nodules were disappearing. And this lovely-looking lady, I have found my salvation. It was my idea, not the doctor's, and it's better than any medicine he prescribed. So, the envelope is complete and mailed. You don't have to open. I just open it. I take out the coupon and send it in. We'll discuss that later. I'm talking about how the first part of the envelope can. Creativity is a natural gift. It is built into you by 2 billion years of evolution. The only thing that makes creativity hard is we don't don't really know how to be quite clear. We don't really know how to become connected. So we say, how do we come out of the conscious mind into the unconscious mind? Again, we went up against the block. The conscious mind doesn't mean anything. The unconscious mind doesn't mean anything either except mystic things. And that doesn't do us much good. So I think a much better word is the focused mind to the unfocused mind. The mind is a very large network of cells which retain thoughts or images and translate the images and thoughts back and forth. The mind has vast networks of these cells, but it specializes in using only a certain amount of cells at any particular gaze. So, when you looked at something, if I look right there, I can only see this part of the room and not this part of the room. This is blurred. This is quite in focus. If I look at this sneaky little arthritis tricks, I can hold 7 bites or 7 words in my conscious mind at a time. That's why we read sequentially. That's why we invented writing that goes along the line, interrupts itself, goes along another line, interrupts itself, goes along another line. We can hold 7 of those. Now, that is our mind focused. 7 images, words at a time. Now, surrounding those cells is this huge number of other ideas which are churning around. They are not focused. They are unfocused. And they are floating around. When you are focused and you pay attention, you only concentrate on these logical things that come into your mind, things that you are paying attention to. When you want to become creative, when you want to get new connections to the 7 things in the center, you have to get out of there. That's why we work for the 33 minutes and we play for 5 minutes. The brain connects when it plays. When it works, it thinks, uses logic, etc. But it doesn't connect. It doesn't make these connections. The best example that I've ever seen, and there were a lot of good ones, is the movie Amadeus about Mozart.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Mozart was a very unusual man. Died at 32, I think. And he never rewrote his music. If you look at his scores, every note is put in place. And it was never changed. It was as though he just wrote it from God and then sent it out to be played. But it wasn't. He had a very simple system of escaping his focused, conscious mind. He always had a billiard table everywhere he went. He'd have his pen, and he'd have his score, and he would have the billiard table, and he would have a cue ball. He would take the white ball in his left hand, and he would throw it out until it hit 1, 2, 3 sides and came back to him. Then he would pick it up, catch it as it came back, throw it out, 1, 2, 3 sides, come back. As it went on its little journey through those 3 sides, he wrote a note. Then he picked it up, threw it again, wrote the note while it was traveling, picked it up again. He wrote 1 note at a time every 3 times it hit. Why? It was very simple, of course. His conscious mind, if you throw a billiard ball out onto 3 of those sides, the sides are soft enough that they randomize the billiard ball. It doesn't come out predictable, the trajectory. It would move very slightly. Therefore, your conscious mind changes direction as it goes out. And you can't turn it into an unconscious mind. A focused mind becomes trapped in watching that billiard ball. Your unfocused mind can therefore use its entire range to furnish you with the notes you're looking for if you're Mozart. This is what we do. Now, I had more headlines while I shaved than I had ever done at the computer. I'm such a slob. I have pens all over the house. I always carry them, even when I'm showering. I carry a pen. I write, write, write. Here's the idea I'm looking for. If you get into the habit of doing this and letting yourself go, of having fun, and letting anything in the world come into your mind, even though what it's going to throw out, eventually, as you begin going, especially on vacation where I write most of my best ads and most of my best books, are written in the margins of other people's books on vacation. What happens is you're watching this gorgeous ocean, this beautiful cloud, listening to a CD player, and you're always working on nothing. But your mind suddenly begins outing this stuff, and you scratch down as fast as you can write. You want to go into a feeding frenzy. You want to go into a creative frenzy. You want to have the ideas come so much into your mind that you can't stop. In the same way, never work on one thing at a time. I work on one book, one article, and one ad at the same time. I will spend an hour with one of them, an hour with the second of them, an hour with the third of them. That's why I say 3 hours. When I am working on the biography of Jesus Christ in the year 33 A.D., I will get such marvelous ideas for Rodale, and I will scratch them down. Now, it's silly, but the creative, unfocused mind is by nature silly. So, it is told by James Gardner, the best psychologist around, the creative kind, when you are working on simultaneous projects, continuing simultaneous projects, one will feed the other. And by allowing yourself to go from one to the other, your unconscious mind can work on one while your conscious mind is working on the other. It's like ping pong, free, excited ping pong. So that is creativity. Honey, can I get a drink of water? Thank you. Now, let's talk about writing mailing pieces. What does a mailing piece consist of? Every one of the mailing pieces I have here, most of the mailing pieces I have seen, have separate elements. The first element, of course, is the envelope. Contained within the envelope, there is a series of letters, flyers, subflyers, inserts, etc. And there's an order blank. The entire idea is to get the people to go from the envelope to the order blank. Everything in between is just there because it helps. I am sitting here at this desk, which is much like my desk, and I've done my 3 hours of writing, and I am ready for lunch. And then I'm ready to do whatever I'm going to do for the afternoon. But I've got to do the mailing. I hate the mail. I like the mail because I make money from the mail, but I hate the mail because it's a lot of stuff. So, here I am. And this is all elementary, and you've heard it a dozen times before, but it's imperative. So, I take my mail, and I go like this, and like this, go like this, aha, go like this, go like this. This pile is dead. You have lost money. You have wiped out. You will never see the inside. You will never sign an order blank, he or she. This pile is the active pile. You will come back to it. She will come back to it. She will look at it. Now, at the top of both of these is what is usually called the headline. Sneaky little arthritis tricks. A new generation of natural home remedies. And the question always been, it's an extremely good question, is what about the headline? What does the headline do? How long should a headline be? How many headlines can you have on an envelope? When I first began copywriting, the accepted belief was that there should be a single headline. The single headline should lead into the copy. Preferably, the copy should sell the product or present an overwhelming claim which should have tremendous power. The key word is power. Power to sell. I hate that. The headline has absolutely nothing in the world to do except one thing. Get you to read the sentence underneath the headline. The sentence underneath the headline has absolutely nothing in the world to do except one thing. Get you to read the sentence that follows it. The sentence that follows it has absolutely nothing to do except get you to read the sentence that follows it. The headline should not try to sell. It should not try to identify the company. It should not try to present overwhelming power. All it's got to do is get the prospect to read the next line. That's all. Everything else is subsidy. Sneaky little arthritis tricks is only there so the person will read with natural foods and do-it-yourself secrets to pain-proof over 100 men and women like you. Why? Because all you've got to do is get them into this habit of reading one line after another line after another line. They should read every line, preferably, on this envelope. They should then want to read more and turn over. When they get here, they should preferably read that, and then they should preferably open. Now, on the back, we talk about youth pills giving away free, and the last line on the back is, see other age reversal miracles inside. It's nice if you can ask them to move inside. Give them some reason for opening the envelope. The big problem is to get them to open the envelope. I would say in general that the headline has been replaced by the envelope. The entire envelope, the front and back, are your sales pitch. You can have hundreds of words on the envelope. They don't have to be headlines. All they have to do is be tantalizing. I love the fact that for a while, we all could use these marvelous big things. This is a brand new piece, which is also being sent out because they give us a lot of room. And we can sell and sell and sell and prove and prove and demonstrate and demonstrate. So that's wonderful. Okay, you get them to open up. That's all you have to do. All you have to do is get them to open up. They take it out, and the first thing that approaches them is the letter, usually. It doesn't have to be. There's no reason for it to be. But usually the letter is, and it says what arthritis doctors won't tell you. Conventional. Purposely conventional, because they've had so much hitting there that they simply want to make it very soft here. Then the next line is, unbelievable as it might sound, dear friends, about 100 of our participants, all 100 men and women who suffered for years from the agonies of arthritis, no longer see a doctor, a physical therapist, or any kind of practitioner for arthritis treatment. For example, and then we go into a series of case histories, and the entire 6-page letter is a case history. What is a case history? A case history is a proof of someone that acted as your surrogate to prove the products, so you don't have to take a list with it. Then we have the flyer. The flyer is devoted to doctors proving this, what doctors say about this. That's all on that, and then you have the flyer. You have to do two things in all this material. Number one, you have to pile belief upon belief upon belief, desire upon desire upon desire. Number two, you have to give them an escape route. There are some people who will absolutely love to read everywhere, and you have to satisfy them. There are some people who will read not that much. They don't want to. And so they'll want to be let go at that point, especially if you have a money-back guarantee, a free 21-day trial. They'll go directly to that. That answers the question, how long should the copy be? The copy should be as long as you need to contain the claims and not bankrupt the company. But always remember that within that copy, the person can cut out at any moment. So you want to give him, on the envelope, and in the first page of the letter and the flyer, enough to be a complete mailing piece to convince them to try. So, the people who can't stay with you, or don't have the time or the interest to stay with you, can order anyway. You've got to also remember that you're never selling anything. Never, ever, ever, ever sell anything. In mail order, you always ask the person to try it. The book will sell itself. A lot of people know that now. And, of course, the return is large because they don't like the book. That's wonderful, but at least they tried the book. And they'll try the next one. In conjunction with that, you have to ask the question, who are you writing to? Now, it's a very important question. absolutely essential. Are you writing to a man? Are you writing to a woman? Are you writing to an individual of both sexes? Are you writing to a mass audience? What is your audience for this? Unless you know that and can answer that, then of course you can't really direct your copy to them. The answer is very simple, but two-faced. You're writing to an individual, a single person always who shares a problem or desire with a huge mass of other people. Now, try to identify the problem, arthritis, very large, millions, with the person who is getting the mailing piece, which also leaves you to the most powerful word in the English language. The most powerful word in the English language is not yes, and it's not free. It's you. And the word you is absolutely determinative in mail order publishing and mail order marketing. Editorially, when I see someone say, take the hands and apply the cream to the face, I go crazy, because there are no the hands and there are no the face. There is only your hands and your face. So, the first thing the copywriter has to do, the first remedy, if those things are there, the copywriter has to apply to the editorial. Change all the these to all the yous. Now, when you begin to work in the position of the you, then you begin to see that the you is highly individuated, and that this single person who represents this mass of people are completely unique, and you have to be able to find out their uniqueness and be able to talk to it. When I did the arthritis, I had never met anyone intimately who had arthritis. Therefore, I didn't really know much about arthritis. But the people who wrote the book, the people who wrote the letters that made up the book, knew intimately about arthritis. And I found that they talked a language which was completely incomprehensible to me. And that's how they used this kind of drug, that kind of drug. So I determined that I would try in the copy to use as many technical terms as possible, because those people were familiar with those technical terms. They had been with doctors for years and failed, and therefore, that would make it more youthful. Not youthful, youthful. Your copy has to be full of yous, and the you has to be so the person can identify. You must be that person. Now, it brings up another general point, which is, for the profession, no matter what you do, success is extremely lonely. And if you want to be successful, you have to accept the loneliness. You have to accept the extreme modesty and humbleness that success demands. I'll tell you why. You have to know the person that you're going to ask for something. If you're a salesman, if you're a lawyer, if it's a judge, etc., you have to know that person. There's only one way you can learn that. The greatest asset after hard work is the ability to listen. You have to listen to several different layers out there in order to be successful. You have to listen, first of all, to the person who has whatever you've got, the problem you're going to try and solve. You have to know that person so well that you can sound like him. He will mistake you for his mirror image. You have to know the kind of society that he comes from, the layer of society he comes from. And finally, you have to know the society. So, when you go to a party, when you get in a taxi cab, when you're with somebody on a bus or a subway, your job is to ask questions, show appreciation, and listen. I was born in Butte, Montana, and that is one of the great heritages I ever got, because I spent 15 years in one of the smallest, most backwoods cities in the United States. I never lost. My mother used to say, you can take the boy out of Butte, Montana, but you can't take Butte, Montana out of the boy. She's right. Okay, I don't want to lose that. I think and I feel just like 80% of the population in this country. When I went to New York, I became extremely sophisticated. And now I hang out with sophisticated people. And that's horrible. What I do is I constantly get away from it, get away from it, get away from it. I would suggest that you do that too. When you reach your level of success, you are in danger, merchandising. You lose this kind of feeling. You've got to keep it. That's the environment. You're in with the environment that feeds you. That's the environment you must be able to reason. That's when I say that the required medium for you is all the junk magazines in the United States. I would go out tomorrow and get a subscription to the National Enquirer and read every single word in it. That's your audience. There are your headlines. There are your people and their feelings. I would definitely get done there. I would watch the tabloid television shows. I do always. I get in trouble when people walk into the house and see piles of stuff, but I love it. If a movie does $100 million or more, especially a movie that does $200 or $300 million or more, I would go to it two or three times. Go out and get all the Joel Silver movies and watch them over and over again. Joel Silver did such mortal classics as Lethal Weapon 1, 2, and 3, Death Wish 6, 7, and 8, Pretty Woman, which was a great movie. Anyway, you've got to sit in front of Lethal Weapon 1. This is the greatest training for any merchandiser in the world, especially copy people. You've got to see it three times. Preferably, sit in it at least three times in one night. Let me explain. You've got to pick up the rhythm. And you've got to see how Silver, who was an absolute genius, Spielberg and Silver are the two great communication geniuses of our country at this moment. Every timing, every 3 minutes, he throws another blast at you. There's a head being smashed against the windshield. There's 50 people being blown out of an airplane. And then there's a few minutes of dialogue which means nothing. Now, what you are doing is you are writing Joel Silver copy. You don't write. I don't write. This letter is not a series of paragraphs. This letter is a series of headlines. These paragraphs are brains smashing against windows. Believe me, every one of them can be taken and put up here. You've got to give them the punch. You're asking someone to read hundreds of words, spend 15, 20 minutes with you in a busy day. You've got to give them that charge, charge, charge. Joel Silver movies. You better know, really, this is an isolated group. We deal with older audiences. So, you better know all the older songs, all of them. The great hits of the 50s and 60s, and they too reverberate. They still make people feel. It might also be good to have a top 10 teenage movies. You've got to have movies and hits and songs. People live by hidden desire. I was at Phillips and gave somewhat the same lecture. In the question and answer period, there was this extremely disturbed young man, brilliant man. He put up his hand and said, how would you sell a $99 investment? I said, well, Gecko. And he said, Gecko? Remember Wall Street? There was a terrible promoter called Gecko. He was a real slime. Every one of that man's readers wants to be Gecko. He wants to be square, honest, and uncut. Gecko. You've got to know who your people are. And you've got to face up to the reality that we have shameful desires. Some of the great desires, you're giving people health, but you're also giving them a mess. Okay, I'm going to rush. Heaven and hell. Very interesting to think of your merchandise. Your person is here, in the center, and here is hell, and here is heaven. What you are doing is presenting him with the opportunity to go to heaven and escape hell. Think in terms that dramatic. The absolute agony of arthritis versus a pain-free, healthy life for the next 50 years. Heaven and hell. You are talking in dramatic terms. You must realize that your people are the finest people in the world. You must have that firm belief. Americans are the nicest people in the world. They are fair. They are honest. They want good things. They want good things for themselves and their children. Now, they're very intelligent. It's incredible to see people that other people think are not intelligent and really talk to them or let them open up and make them unafraid they'll open up and find out how smart they are. But they are not giving you their full attention, their full smartness, etc. They are giving you part attention. And you must be very dramatic to get through. just like a painting on a wall. If you make the painting very small on the wall and someone is over there, they can't see it. So you make it very big and with a great deal of contrast, then they can see it. So you have to be melodramatic and be fair and be honest and fill your stuff with proof, and they will respond. They are good people. We have often sent out two books in my company. We sent two books to the same person. We do it all the time because sometimes they slip through, and we continually get these books back from people, and they say, you sent us two books. And they paid $2.50 to send them back to you. They're wonderful people. Also, the engine that moves mail order copy can be summarized by the contrast between the claim and the mechanism. Now, what do I mean by that? You make a strong claim that's easily obtained, the claim and the mechanism. I wrote an ad for this company a long time ago called Tricks of the Trade, So Powerful They Can Change Your Life. I think it ran for 8-10 years, something like that. It's pretty strong. One of the lines was, a way to vacuum dust from drawers without removing their content. It doesn't sound possible. How do you do it? So, you've got a very strong claim with a very strange mechanism. So, what the person has to do is he has to go to page 71 and find out. If you get enough of these, they'll do it. Now, as you begin to develop as a company and a person within the company, what you're going to find is you're going to run into claim exhaustion. Claim exhaustion is the fact that the claims all begin to sound the same after how many ways can you cure arthritis? How many pounds can you tell a person they can lose? You get to the point where everything looks the same. It blurs. When you get to that point, your copy is going to have to make up for the claims. The copy is going to have to give a way of doing this or a way of achieving this that is so strange that the person will believe in it all over again, enough to try. Now, the master of that is Boardroom. Boardroom has evolved a style in which the mechanism is as important as the claim. And if you look at a Boardroom piece by the great, great, great and revered Mel Martin, you will find that the claim doesn't sound so intense. What never to be done on an airplane. Bills okay to pay late. They're nice, but they're not overwhelming. They sound very little. Most copywriters can't figure out how they pull. Well, they pull because there's an implied mechanism in there that you would like to see. One of the greatest things is you can't cash an unsigned check. Right? Wrong. See page 72. What is this? What is this miracle? So, the more your field progresses, the more the claim density that came before you, that you have to fight, even your own stuff, the more you have to twist. That's called a twist. Twist, twist, twist. Now let me see if I have anything else, then we'll go on to the questions. We call these can't be done. It's a lovely way to think about it. You try and get yourself a mechanism, and imply a mechanism for a medium-sized or very, very big claim. But better for a medium-sized claim because it's more believable. And then you give something that simply cannot be done. And then the person will have to send for the book to see how it's done. He will even send for the book if he doesn't believe you because he wants to prove you wrong. Because it itches and he can't sleep at night. A lot of nice things this company has helped me do. This is something that was strictly done for this company. I mean, I do other things like this. I'm sure the company does other things like this, too. But this is an overloaded envelope. This envelope, which is beautiful and full of illustrations, it's not an ugly envelope. It's beautifully done by the art department. What can they do when I give them this much copy? I apologize to the art department, but look at the number of claims. You've got 37 different claims on the front of the envelope. And on the back of the envelope, you've got almost 50. This is a wonderful sales medium, and I think it was invented here working with these people. You were able in this company to really pile in copy on the envelopes. At least, I think this is the first company that really put copy on the envelope. Here's a lovely can't be done. Unspoken rules to make or break your career. How can you know a rule if it's unspoken that's going to make or break your career? Very good headline, because people have to find out what it is. Every company comes up against a compete factor. What you do is absolutely right on. You simply take the product and you assign it new copywriters. This is for proof, which was absolutely the original one, which was the doctor's identified most proof with big carrots on it. One of the best pieces of copy I have ever seen in my entire life, combined with one of the best layouts I have ever seen. The only way I could even compete against it is go completely around it. Throw out everything that the previous person had done and create a new product. Now, you've got to realize that a product is not a book. We do not sell books. We do not sell magazines. We do not sell newsletters. You sell bundles of functions, things that the thing will do. So, that when you get a book and it gets tired, what you have to do is go in and get a whole new set of do's. So, I went in and got a whole new set of do's. Doctors astounded by new food theory, which hadn't been found out before. And then there were quotes from doctors on the side. I have pulled this great piece that came before. Now, of course, the old piece had gotten a little tired and been around, but nevertheless, it did. So, never say a product is dead unless you've exhausted all its bundles of do's. I thank you very much for listening and hope that anything that I said today will be beneficial to you in your careers down the road. Thank you.
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.